Shall we begin?
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavirjan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Very good. Welcome back. We're continuing to spend this time on Thursday evenings with this Vrindavana Mahatmyam. And I'm enjoying this the more we go into this. I wasn't sure. It's not the usual kind of class, not our usual kind of text, but this is, it's quite pleasant. And one of the things, two things make it very pleasant. The foremost, of course, it's all Krishna bhakti. But the second thing is the poetry is really quite delightful. And the Sanskrit is fairly simple, so it's not very obscure. Speaking of poetry, if you try reading Kalidasa, I get tired reading Kalidasa. It's very hard, very challenging. A great poet like Kalidasa, the convention is wherever a simple word will do, don't use it. Use the most obscure word possible. And when you read Kalidasa, that's what you're in for. So, you know, for great scholars, it's very challenging and interesting. But for the sake of bhakti, we don't need very complicated texts like that. So this text is actually very, very simple. We just finished the first chapter just to remember the context. In the Padma Purana, there are these five major sections, khandhas. And we're studying a portion of the fifth kanda, a portion which is known as Vrindavana Mahatmyam, and that begins with chapter 69 in that Vrindavana Mahatmyam. So we actually, I know it's our first chapter, but really speaking, we finish chapter 69 and we begin chapter 70 of that Patala kanda this evening. The prior chapter, you remember, was an introduction to this very mystical land called Nitya Vrindavana, to be distinguished from the UP Vrindavana. The UP Vrindavana. I haven't been there. I want to go there. I haven't been yet. I've been to so many other places, but Vrindavana Mathura got left out somehow. But I suppose, like many other North Indian towns, it's kind of a hot, dusty, dirty place. I'm sure the temples are very nice and the tanks in particular are quite nice, but typical North Indian town, I would presume. On the other hand, what's being described here is not, as a joke, it's not UP Vrindavana, it's called Nitya Vrindavana, a Vrindavana that existed before Vrindavana and UP existed. In other words, you could think of this Nitya Vrindavana as being the prototype because of which the physical Vrindavana took form. So it was introduced to us in a very mystical, magical way. And then in the midst of this mysterious forest, we found Sri Krishna. And that was the description of that magical forest with Sri Krishna's glorious presence. That was the content of the first chapter. The second chapter picks up where the first left off, and it continues to describe the setting. Remember, this text is primarily for meditation. And for the sake of meditation, we want to have a very vivid image in our minds, a setting for meditation. Like a place you go to for meditation. To have a place you go to for meditation is very important. It can be a physical place. Many of you will have a puja room or a meditation room in your home. It's wonderful. I have an area in my room which is set aside for prayer and meditation. I love to sit there. Years ago, when I lived in Santa Barbara, California, I had a special place on the bluff overlooking the Pacific Ocean. There was one particular spot on that bluff. You'd sit there and you would have a panoramic view of the Pacific Ocean. You look down, it was about, I don't know, 50 feet or so down to the sand. And it was a favorite place. I went to that place certainly hundreds of times over the years to meditate. To have a particular place you go to for the sake of meditation is very powerful. That location becomes identified with your deep state of meditation. So just going to that place puts you in that bhava, puts you in that condition, even before you begin the actual practice of meditation. Well, that location need not merely be a physical place that you go to. It can be a place we create in our minds. And long ago in a meditation session, I talked about creating a temple in the mind. Well, here we're not creating a temple in the mind. Manamandira, you've heard that expression. Manamandira, a temple in your mind or in your heart. This is not a temple in our minds. It's an entire forest. In fact, not just a forest, many forests. Many forests with lots of different things inside. So that's what's being described here for the sake of our meditation. Now, the first section, as I said, introduced this magical forest with Sri Krishna's glorious presence in the midst of it. We continue now to talk about what is taking place. I think it appears that the scene shifts to the interior of Sri Krishna's palace, as it were. So his abode in the centralmost forest in Vrindavana. He has some kind of special abode. It's not really described as a house or a palace or a kutir. It simply is his abode. It's referred to in one place as a mandir. But mandir, you know that mandir in Sanskrit, mandiram, can just mean house. It happens to be Bhagavan's house in common parlance. But really, mandiram can be any structure, any dwelling is mandiram. So we now turn then to the scene inside Sri Krishna's mandira, in his dwelling. And of course, all of this is being narrated by Lord Shiva to Goddess Parvati, so we pick up that conversation. Parvatyuvacha, Parvatyu, yada karnanam hetasya, yada karnanam hetasya, yeva Yeva parishadha prabho, yeva parishadha, taraham shrotum icchami, taraham shrotum icchami, katayasvadaya nidhe, katayasvadaya. Aham shrotum icchami, I want to know, that which is yat akaranam etasya, that which is to be heard with reference to Vrindavana, etasya, with regard to this, of that Vrindavana, I want to know about this. About what in particular? About parishadaha, about those, and it's plural, those associated with Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna's parishad, his assembly of people, the people surrounding Sri Krishna. Parishad, so Parishadaha, those associated with Sri Krishna. Goddess Parvati says, Aham Shrotum Ichami, I want to hear about those. Katayaswa, please tell me, Daya Nade, O ocean of compassion. Ishvaravacha, Ishvara, Radhaya Saha Govindam, Radhaya Saha Govindam, Swarna Simhasane Stitam, Swarna Sinhasane Purvokta Rupa Lavanyam, Purvokta Rupa Lavanyam, Divya Bhushambara Srajam, Divya Bhushambara. Ishvara, Lord Shiva, Uvacha, he answers Goddess Parvati. Radhaya Saha Govindam. Lord Krishna, together with Radha, where are they? Swarna Sinhasane. They're on his golden throne, Stitam. They abide together. And so what do they call it in English? A love seat. It's got room for two. Not like this one. There's room for two. Purvokta Rupa Lavanyam. The beauty of these two has already been described, along with their Divya Bhushna and Ambara, along with their divine ornaments and clothing and malas. Tribhangi Manju Susnigdham, Tribhangi Manju Susnigdham, Gopi Lochana Tarakam, Gopi Lochana Tarakam, Tad Bahye Yoga Pitecha, Tad Bahye Yoga Pitecha, Swarna Simhasana Vrite, Swarna Simhasana. So, Tribhangi Manju Snigdham, the one who is beloved, Susnigdham, very desirable, we become very attached to. Who is that? Tribhangi Manju, the one who's beautiful because of his three bends in his body. So Sri Krishna's very casual posture. And that Sri Krishna, of course, is Sri Krishna together with Radha on that throne made for two. Both of them together are Gopi Lochana Tarakam, the ones who go on attracting the eyes and attention of all of the gopis. Now, Tad Bahye, outside of what? Yoga Pite, their seat called a Singhasana is here called Yoga Pita, the seat of yoga. Yoga here means power, the seat of power, the divine seat, the seat of Sri Krishna and Radha. So beyond that seat where Sri Krishna, that seat which is Swarna Simhasana, so again it's described as a golden throne, but Avrite, surrounding that golden throne. Now the image that's being presented is inside of Sri Krishna's mandira, is this golden jeweled throne on which Sri Krishna and Radha are seated, and it's surrounded by many, many people. They're not alone. I guess to be alone, the stories go, they have to run off to some little forest someplace. But in the mandiram, they're not alone. They're surrounded by lots of people. In fact, we're going to see now a description of eight gopis that are standing around in the immediate vicinity of Sri Radha and Krishna, and then eight more gopis that are also standing there. So for a total of 16 gopis who are associated there. And before we see the description, the intent of this meditation is to describe the scene so well that you can imagine yourself standing amongst the others in this parishad. So we become symbolically part of Sri Krishna's Parishad. So that's why in this chapter, the Parishad is described in some detail to make us familiar with it so that we can envision ourselves as being in some manner in our meditation, a part of that Parishad. So the description of the gopis begins. Pratyanga prabhasaveshaha, pratyanga prabhasavesha, pradhana krishna vallabhaha, pradhana krishna lalitadhya prakrityam sha, lalitadhya prakrityam mula prakriti radhika, mula prakriti. So now we're being introduced to the pradhana krishna vallabha, those who have the most love for Sri Krishna, or those who are the most beloved to Sri Krishna, those who are pradhana, the foremost amongst those who are beloved to Sri Krishna. And they are pratyanga rabhasa aveshaha. The poetry is lovely. And I'm going to make a small attempt to be a little bit more poetic in my translations. I'm so used to translating Vedantic texts, which are very technical, so I have to learn to be a little bit more poetic. This is a very poetic text, so let me try to match the poetic nature of the text. So every limb of these gopis is saturated with their passion for Sri Krishna. Pratyanga, every limb. Every atom in their body. Who are they? Lalita Adyaha. There are a number of gopis, such as Lalita, one of the many gopis. And all of these gopis are Prakriti Amsha. They're portions of Prakriti. Now, Prakriti has many meanings. What sense are we using the word Prakriti here? Just ahead it says, Mula Prakriti Radhika. Radha, also called Radhika. Radha is the Mula Prakriti. Now here we're getting this wonderful identification of this bhakti text with the philosophy of Vedanta and Sankhya, the philosophy that permeates the culture, where Prakriti, Mula Prakriti, is a synonym for Maya. Mula Prakriti is the power through which this universe is created. From a philosophical standpoint, all that exists is Brahman, but Brahman, being Nirguna, Nishkriya, is incapable in and of itself of causing creation to come and be manifest. If there's only Brahman, there's no way to account for the existence of creation. Therefore, what the Vedantic rishis taught, what the Vedantic acharyas taught, is that Parabrahma is accompanied by Maya Shakti, this power of creation. It's with that Maya Shakti that Brahman is able to cause the universe to come into creation. And from a philosophical Vedantic point of view, Brahman, together with that Maya Shakti, is the one whom we pray to as Ishvara. So then we understand Ishvara to have a male aspect and a female aspect. Brahman represents pure existence, the male aspect. Maya, or Mula Prakriti, represents the female aspect, the creative capacity. So our very concept of Ishvara is one that includes both genders, male and female. It makes sense. Everything in the universe represents or embodies two genders, so it makes sense that the source for all should have these two genders. So then you can imagine then that Sri Krishna is going to represent that Brahman, that male principle, and Radha, here Radhika, then represents that Maya Shakti, that Mula Prakriti, the creative capacity because of which the universe exists. Then all of the other gopis are Prakriti Amsha. They're portions, parts of Radha's power, parts of her Radha is the possessor of that creative capacity, and all of the other gopis possess a small part of that creative capacity. Then, we're now going to get a description of the eight gopis who are standing immediately in the vicinity of Sri Radha and Krishna, and they actually stand circled around. Let's see how that's described. Sammukhe Lalita Devi, Sammukhe Lalita Devi, Shyamala Vayukonake, Shyamala Vayukonake, Uttare Srimati Dhanya, Uttare Srimati Dhanya, Eshanyam Shri Haripriya, Eshanyam Shri Haripriya. Sammukhe, right in front of Sri Radha and Krishna. Who stands there? Lalita Devi. Lalita, one of the foremost of the gopis. Then, Vayukonake. We saw these Vastu-related terms in the prior chapter. So directions, it's only in English that we talk like north, south, northwest, northeast, etc. So in Sanskrit, if you want to talk about the northwest direction, you use the language of Vastu, and that's called Vayu's corner, as it were. So in the northwest direction, who stands there? Her name is Shyamala, one of the eight gopis. Uttare, in the northern direction, who stands to the north? Srimati Dhanya, a gopi named Dhanya. And Eshanyam, in the Ishana direction. Ishana is that holy northeast direction. So to the northeast side is who? Sri Hari Priya, the one who's beloved to Sri Hari, that's her name. Hari Priya. So here we're getting them surrounding Sri Radha and Krishna. Vishakha chatata purve, Vishakha chatata purve, Shaibhya chagnau tatah param, Shaibhya chagnau tatah param, Padma chadakshine paschat, Padma chadakshine paschat, Nairithye kramashah stithaha, Nairithye kramashah stithaha. Vishakha, another of the eight main gopis, Tata, in the same way, she stands to the purve. Yeah, to the east, correct. Yeah, so Vishakha stands to the east, and Shaibhya, another of the gopis, stands to the agnau, means where Agni is, and Agni is associated with the southeast direction, exactly as we saw in a prior chapter. Then, we still have three directions left, the Dakshina, south, the Paschama, the west, and Nairitika, which was the southwest, the area, land of the ancestors, so to speak. So who is there? Well, her name is Padma, and she goes there, Kramashaha, she goes from one place to the next. Sometimes she's here, sometimes she's there, sometimes she's there. So in these other three locations. So if you've been counting, we have seven accounted for so far. So we should see one more here. Go yoga pite kesaragre, yoga pite kesaragre. Charu Chandravati Priya, Charu Chandra, Ashtau Prakritaya Punyaha, Ashtau Prakritaya Punya, Pradhana Krishna Vallabhaha, Pradhana Krishna. Yogapite, and in front of that Yogapita, that holy seat of Sri Radha and Krishna, Kesara Agre. Kesara is a name for this tree. It's called Bakula tree. I have no idea what kind of tree that is. So standing in front of that tree, that tree which is in front of the asana. Who stands there? Chandravati. So that's the eighth of the gopis. We're going to get more discussion of the gopis later. Here they're just enumerated. Ashtau prakratayaha. Eight. Eight prakritis, they're called. Eight amshas, eight elements of Radha's power of creation. They are all punyaha, they're holy. Pradhanaha, they're the foremost. Krishna valabhaha, foremost of those beloved to Sri Krishna. Then, in addition to these eight, there's another eight described. Pradhana prakritis twadya. Pradhana prakritis twadya. Radha Chandravati Sama, Radha Chandravati Sama, Chandravali Chitrareka, Chandravali Chitrareka, Chandra Madana Sundari, Chandra Madana Sundari. So, Pradhana Prakritihi, these are the main energies, as it were, the main energies of creation associated with Radha. Adya. So these are the foremost prakritis. But there are others. Radha Chandravati Sama. There are others who are equivalent to Radha, who are as beautiful as Radha, such as Chandravati. This is the first of the next group of eight. So, take it the other way. So, Radha Chandravati Sama. There are eight more equivalent in beauty to Radha and Chandravati. Who are they? Chandravali is one. Chitrareka is another. Chandra is a third. Madana Sundari is a fourth. And then we have four more described. Priya cha Shri Madhumati, Priya cha Shri Madhumati, Chandra Rekha Hari Priya, Chandra Rekha Hari Priya, Shodashadhya Prakritayaha, Shodashadhya Prakritayaha, Pradhana Krishna Vallabhaha, Pradhana Krishna. So the remaining four are Priya, Madhumati, Chandrareka, and Haripriya, and Shodasha Adyaha Prakritayaha. These are the 16 main prakritis. So all of the gopis associated with Radha are called prakritis. Radha is the Mula Prakriti, Maya Shakti, the power of creation. All of the gopis are her amshas. They all share in her power, in her glory, and they are all Pradhana Krishna Vallabhaha. They are the foremost amongst those loved by Sri Krishna. Now, before we continue, all of these goddesses are described, as we saw before, they're described as being unusually beautiful. You know, in life, not everyone is so beautiful. When you go out on the street, most people look pretty ordinary. They look like you and me. They look like ordinary people. But if you look at, maybe a good place to look to a good example would be in these magazines, these fashion magazines. You know, every lady in the fashion magazine, well, they're all models and they all look extraordinarily beautiful. Similarly, in works of art, the figures presented in works of fine art are usually not ugly, misshapen people or even ordinary-looking people. Usually the people presented in works of art are very beautiful, not always, but quite often. There's something about beauty. Here, Sri Radha and Krishna are surrounded by these 16 extremely beautiful gopis. The beauty of the gopis represents something. Beauty in general. We've touched upon this topic a little bit before. The topic is called aesthetics. Aesthetics as a philosophical study. in Western philosophy, there are entire books written on aesthetics. Aesthetics not doesn't just mean what's beautiful and what's not. It's kind of the theory of beauty. Why do we find things beautiful and other things not? It's fascinating, I think, that science has actually tried to study the beauty of human faces. And believe it or not, they can analyze with computer programs beauty of human faces. Now, that's not very poetic to talk about that, and I'm not going to talk much further, except to share with you one discovery science made about beauty with regard to faces. Most faces have small asymmetries. One eye will be just very slightly higher or lower than the other. One ear will be a little bit different than the other. One cheek will be a little different than the other. Most faces have small asymmetries. Well, what scientists found was symmetry is beautiful. The most symmetrical faces are the ones we find most beautiful. Now, building up a point here, beauty with regard to a face is related, at least in part, to symmetry. Symmetry refers to a kind of mathematical perfection, doesn't it? It does. Symmetry is a kind of mathematical perfection. One theory of beauty, then, is beauty is a physical representation of perfection. Think about that. A physical representation of perfection. Take nature and make it even more perfect. You have art. For example, if you want a picture of a beautiful forest, if you take a picture with a camera, in your field of view, there'll be several trees that are dead, dying, broken, misshapen, etc. And that's the real world. If you take a picture with a camera in a forest, that's what you're going to see. An artist who wants to represent the most beautiful forest possible will draw every tree as a perfect tree. Art can do better than nature. Nature is what it is. It's glorious with its imperfections, but high art can be better than nature. The colors are deeper than nature. The shapes are better than nature. So the theory here, then, is that beauty is a physical manifestation of perfection. Of course, perfection is something we associate not with the world, not with human beings, not with nature even. We associate perfection with Bhagavan. So, Sri Radha and Krishna, surrounded by these beautiful gopis, surrounded by beauty, represents that perfection associated with Bhagavan. In Bhagavan's presence, everything is perfect, everything is beautiful. All right, then let us proceed. So we've just talked about these 16 gopis. Now there are others yet. Let's see. Oh no, they're described here. Vrindavaneshwari Radha, Vrindavaneshwari Radha, Tata Chandravali Priya, Tata Chandravali, Abhinna Guna Lavanya, Abhinna Guna Lavanya, Saundaryash Charulochanaha, Saundaryash Charulochanaha. So their beauty is described here. So describing all of them along with Vrindavana Ishwari, the goddess of Vrindavana, who is Radha. So along with Vrindavaneshwari Radha, goddess Radha, along with her are Chandravali and Priya, the other gopis. All of these gopis are abhinna. Here abhinna means they're all the same. They all have the same gunas, same qualities. They all have the same lavanya, beauty. They all have the same saundarya, also means beauty. they are all charu. They're all beautiful. They're all charu lochanaha. They all have beautiful eyes. All right. And further, their beauty is described. Manohara mugdaveshaha. Manohara mugdave kishori vayasojvalaha. Kishori. Agretana stathachanya. Agretana. Gopakanya sahasrashaha. Gopakanya. Actually, going into the next topic. So the first line goes with the prior topic. So all of these gopis are manohara. They steal your mind away. They mugdavesha. They have beautiful clothing. They're all kishori vayavas. They're all in that teenage period. I think 12 to 16 years of age. It's true. We all go downhill after that. What can you say? That's the best. And it's all downhill from then. And they're all ujvalaha. They're all shining. Now, that describes all of these beautiful gopis. Now, we've described then the 16 gopis immediately surrounding Sri Radha and Krishna. Do you think that's all? Only 16? Well, agretanaha, in front of them, tata anya, there are others. Who are being described now are gopakanyaha, the daughters of all the gopas in Vrindavana. So there are other girls, other gopis. How many? We just described 16. Well, we're not even getting started. Sahasrashaha, thousands of other gopis. So this is, Sri Krishna's mandira must be a pretty big place to accommodate thousands of other gopis. And now they're described. Shuddha kanchana punjabhaha, shuddha kanchana punjab, suprasanna sulochanaha, suprasanna tadhrupa hridayarudhaha, tadhrupa hridayar, tadashlesha samutsukaha, tadashlesha samutsukaha. Nice description. Shuddha kanchana punjabhaha, they shine like heaps of molten gold, pure molten gold. They're shining with that golden radiance. They're suprasannaha, they're so pleasing to look at. Sulochanaha, their eyes are so beautiful. Tad rupa hridaya arudhaha, and their hearts are always fixed on Sri Krishna. Tad, I can only smile when I read this. Ashlesha samutsukaha. They're always anxious to embrace Sri Krishna. They can't wait. They're all, and you can imagine that they're all standing in a big group and they're at some distance from Sri Krishna, so they're longing to get close enough to embrace him. Then, Shyama mritara se magna, spurat tad bhava manasaha, spurad tad bhava mana, netrot palarchite Krishna, netrot palarchite Krishna, parabjer pita cheta saha, parabjer pita cheta saha. And I think there has to be that repha there, parabjer. Arpita cheta saha. I think it's missing in this text. You can't get meaning without it. So, beautiful poetry. Simple, but beautiful. Netra utpala archita. Krishna. Krishna parabje. their eyes. Their eyes are like are offered. Yeah. Their eyes are I'm trying to capture the poetry. Their eyes are offered at Sri Krishna's holy feet. What does it mean? Their eyes are offered. Where are they looking? That's it. And Spurat, their eyes are shining and tad. Huh? No. Where am I? There. Yeah. Spurat tad bhava manasaha. Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the second line first. I'll finish that second line. And arpita chetasaha, and their minds are offered also at Sri Krishna's holy feet. And they are, the prior line, shyama amrita rasa rase magnaha. They are immersed in the blessed nectar of Sri Krishna. Immersed in the blessed nectar of Sri Krishna, and tad bhava manasaha, their minds are always fixed on Sri Krishna. The nature of the gopis' minds with regard to Sri Krishna is the exactly as you'd understand the mind of a premi, someone who falls in love. And we love in a very simple romantic sense. Someone who falls in love, it's a condition, really speaking, it's a condition of infatuation. When you fall in love, you know, the prototypical stars in your eyes, when you think of the Bollywood love story, Hollywood love stories, that kind of love. It's not very realistic, I understand, but this is the kind of love of the gopis. They have fallen in love with Sri Krishna in a way that their minds are so drawn by Sri Krishna. Someone who's just fallen in love can barely think of anything else. Their minds are just forcibly drawn to their lover again and again and again. They try to concentrate on whatever they're doing. Their minds are just drawn again and again. This describes the gopis. The gopis have that kind of infatuation with Sri Krishna. Their minds are always drawn there. Now, in addition to these Gopakanya are the daughters of the gopas, but we also have others. We're going to, the next passage describes Shruti Kanyas and Deva Kanyas. So Shruti Kanyas are the daughters of the scriptures. Deva Kanyas are the daughters of the gods. Now these are poetic expressions, I suppose. But the Shrutis are Shruti Kanya. I'm trying to think how I can't even imagine how to express how they looked at this. In this culture, there was so much love and reverence for scripture. Scriptures weren't looked upon as just books. In fact, the scriptures weren't books in those days. The scriptures were orally transmitted. And loved and given such reverence, the same kind of love and reverence that people would receive. Further, Shruti the word is Strilinga, it's a feminine word, so Shruti is considered like a loving mother who takes care of us. By following the scriptures, our lives are enhanced and improved. So in that sense, just like a mother would care for us, scriptures care for us. So here, Shruti Kanya, the daughters of the scriptures, which are about to be described, represents then there are gopis who are called Shruti Kanya, and they symbolically represent the love manifest through the scriptures. We'll see about them. Shruti Kanyas Tado Dakshe, Shruti Kanyas Tato Dakshe, sahasrayuta samyutaha sahasrayuta samyut jagan mugdhi kritakara jagan mugdhi kritaka hridvarti krishna lala saha hridvarti krishna lala saha. So these Shruti Kanyas, these daughters, literally daughters of the scriptures, they are Dakshe, to Sri Krishna's right side, on the right side of Sri Krishna. How many of them? How many scriptures do we have? Well, it's not the number of scriptures, but the number of Shruti Kanya are Sahasra, thousand or thousands. So they're all gathered there together to Sri Krishna, Radha and Krishna's right side, Dakshe. And they Jagan Mugdi Kritakara. Their beauty is such that it entrances the entire world, delights the entire world, and they are Hrit Varti Krishna Lala Saha. Their hearts are always drawn by desire, always drawn to Sri Krishna. Nana sattva swaralapa, nana sattva swaralapa, mugdhi krita jagatrayaha, mugdhi krita jagat, tatra gudharahasyani, tatra gudharahasyani, gayantya prema vihvalaha, gayantya prema vihvalaha. So describing these Shruti Kanyas, Nana Sattva Swara Alapa, they're singing. They're singing with all beautiful melodies that are so beautiful that they entrance all the three worlds, are entranced by their beautiful melodies. And what are they singing about? Gudha Rahasyani. Gayanti. They're singing about the deepest secrets of their hearts. They're pouring their hearts out of their deepest longings and love for Sri Krishna. Why? Because they are prema vihula. They're enraptured with love and just caught up in this whirlwind of love. So these are the Shruti Kanyas. Now come the Deva Kanyas, daughters of the devas, as it were. Deva kanyas tata savye, deva kanyas tata savye, divya veshara sojvalaha, divya veshara sojvala, nana vaidigya nipuna, nana vaidigya nipuna, divya bhava bharanvitaha, Divya Bhava Paran. So the Deva Kanyas, the daughters of the Devas, they're gopis. Gopis who are called daughters of the Devas. And what about them? They have Divya Vesha, divine dress, shining, beautiful dress. And they are Rasa Ujvalaha, full of shining with passion, burning with passion. Here we go, burning with passion. Nana Vaidigya Nipuna, they have varieties of talents, skills, like singing, for example, as we saw before. And Divya Bhava Bhara Anvitaha, they're just endowed with this tremendous love and longing for Sri Krishna. Saundaryatishayenadhyaha, Saundaryatishayenadhyaha, Kathakshati manoharaha, kathakshati manohar, nirlajjas tatra govinde, nirlajjas tatra govinde, tarangasparshanodhyataha, tarangasparshanodhyataha. It gets a little funny again. So, saundarya atishayena adhyaha. They are endowed with beauty that cannot be excelled. Their beauty is such that no one can match their beauty. And their kataksha, their glances, that side glance, that I guess flirtatious glance, when you kind of look out of the corner of your eye at some. So their flirtatious glances are very enticing. And this I find, this is very sweet. So they are nirlajaha govinde tad anga sparshana udyataha. They're trying to embrace udyata. They're trying. They're trying to do what? They're trying to embrace Sri Krishna. Now, there are thousands of gopis, and some of them apparently are trying to embrace, which means they're trying to push their way through this crowd of gopis. They get close enough to Sri Krishna that they can embrace him. And further, they're said to be nirlajaha. They're shameless in their attempt to do so. So boldly, they push their way through this group of gopis trying to get close enough to embrace Sri Krishna. And just a few more verses for tonight. Tad bhava magna manasaha, tad bhava magna manasaha, smita sachi nirikshanaha, smita sachi nirikshana, mandirasya tato bahye, mandirasya tato bahye, priyaya vishadavrute, priyaya vishadav. Okay, again, this verse is actually split. So the first line goes with the prior subject matter. Next line will begin the next. The first line concludes this description of the Devakanyas whose minds are immersed in constant thinking about Sri Krishna, meditating on Sri Krishna. And their eyes, ikshana, their eyes are, again, we're getting those side glances, sachi aside, we're getting those flirtatious glances, and their eyes are smiling. Now, this describes them, the Devakanyas. Interesting scene to imagine some of the gopis pushing their way through, trying to embrace Sri Krishna, and without shame, without embarrassment. Most adult behavior is quite restrained. We're always in the presence of others. We don't want to act too silly. Little silly is okay. I act plenty silly sometimes. But we don't want to come off looking too silly or too peculiar or whatever. We don't, people will think funny things about us. But these gopis are nirlajja. They don't have any shame. They don't have any embarrassment. They're so fixed on Sri Krishna, they could care less what anyone else thinks. That's a very beautiful attitude, to be so fixed, so dedicated to your sadhana, so focused on your process of spiritual growth, that if other people think, oh, why are you spending so much time at the ashram? Or why do you go to the temple so often? Or why are you meditating all the time? And why are you reading all these spiritual books? Who cares what they think, basically? So when you recognize something of tremendous value, suppose no one else recognizes the value, you do. You're going to make an effort to find that of value. If others don't recognize that value, if others don't share that value, it's okay. It's absolutely okay. That is, you don't need to bring them with you or push them to do what you're doing. You know that very well. There's no need to push others. They're okay. But if they look at you funny, why are you doing all this? Okay, let them look. If the gopis can push their way through this crowd trying to grab Lord Krishna and do so without shame or embarrassment, then you can put up with a few funny looks and comments now and then. It doesn't mean a thing. Okay. And to finish up this section now, mandirasya tataha bahye, outside of this mandira. So far what's being described is what's happening inside the mandira. Now, what begins is a description of some things going on outside of Sri Krishna's residence. And that the residence, so if we got thousands of gopis inside, what do you think is outside? Right. So outside, more gopis. And so, priyaya vishada vrate, surrounded by those who love Sri Krishna. And they're all described briefly in the next couple of lines here. Samana vesha vayasaha, samana vesha vayasaha, samana bala paurushaha, samana bala paur, samana guna karmanaha, samana guna karma, samana bharana priyaha, samana bharana priyaha. Samana swara sangita, samana swara sangita, venu varana tatparaha, venu varana tatpara. So, describing all of those gathered outside. Interesting. They're all samana. They all look kind of the same. They are samana vesha. They have similar dress. Samana vayavas, similar age. Samana bala, the same strength. Samana paurusha, the same courage. Samana guna, same qualities. Samana karmanaha, actions. Samana abharana, same ornaments. Samana swara, same song, sangita, the same song, and they are all venu vadana tatparaha. They're all focused on hearing Sri Krishna's flute, is venu. So they're singing along with Sri. I suppose Sri Krishna's playing his flute inside. They're all gathered outside singing along. It's kind of the image that's presented here. Why would the poet present them as all being the same? Notice how many times that word samana was repeated here. So there's something being taught to us here. What is taught by them all being the same, to understand, perhaps we should look at individuality. When someone dresses different from everyone else, why do they do that? You know, when somebody, especially when they dress very peculiarly, it's entertaining to see some people with the green spiky hair, or the piercings here and here and here and everywhere on the body, all the metal piercings. You know, people who dress very unusually. Why? Yeah, to get noticed. I'm different. I'm important. Look at me. Well, that's what individuality, you know, the extreme of individuality, that's what it's all about. It's sort of an ego thing, a cry, a call for attention, or even a cry for attention. Maybe they don't get enough attention. Maybe there aren't people around to really care for them properly. We don't know. But one thing we know is that it calls attention to them. They want to call attention to themselves. All of these gopis gathered around outside are all described as being the same in appearance and behavior. They don't want to stand out. They don't want to call attention to themselves because their attention is not on themselves. Their attention is on Sri Radha and Krishna. This is one of the basic principles of meditation. We take our minds out of our worldly activities and we focus our mind on Bhagavan. I'll give you a metaphor to compare. Has there been a time in your life when you were kind of sad or even a little bit depressed and not doing very well? And then someone close to you got seriously ill. If this hasn't happened to you, just imagine. Suppose you're going through a bit of a tough time in life. You're sad or whatever, even depressed, something, not doing so well. And then someone you really care about is in trouble, and they really need your attention. What do you do? Of course, you focus your energies on that person. You do everything that they need to help them, whatever it is. Do you notice that when you do that, you feel better? Isn't that interesting? Previously, you were not doing so well. Sad, depressed, hurt. You may even be a little bit sick. But when you're focused on taking care of the other person, you forget about your illness, you forget about your problems, you're okay. Well, this is one of the ways that prayer and meditation work. We spend too much time worrying about ourselves and our lives and our thousands and thousands of petty problems. So in prayer and meditation, we have an opportunity to focus our mind away from these petty problems, to turn our minds towards Bhagavan in meditation. And in doing so, we are blessed. We're blessed because the very act of turning our minds towards Bhagavan in meditation lessens our suffering with our own problems. People ask, what is the purpose of prayer? Or how do you know prayer works? It works in very simple ways. By turning your mind towards God, you feel better. People who wonder about the value of prayer, it's silly. Of course, what the argument is, does prayer have a supernatural kind of power? If you say certain prayers, can you cause certain things to change? That's another story. And that's all. To explain that, there's a long teaching in our doctrine of karma about that. We're not going to get into it. But putting that part aside, if your prayer does or doesn't have any kind of power beyond it, one power we know very clearly is it blesses us when we pray. We lift our minds out of our mundane, tedious, difficult life. We bring our minds to Bhagavan. And in doing so, we are blessed. Blessed with some peace, blessed with healing, blessed with a sense of fulfillment, contentment, all of which then helps us proceed in our lives of spiritual growth. So this is one of the many purposes then of meditation. We're going to stop here in our text. I think we've seen quite a series of verses. This chapter, by the way, is not nearly as long as the prior chapter, so we'll go through it more quickly. After we finish this section, we're going to see a brief description of Krishna and then others associated with Sri Krishna, including Balram, Pradumna, Aniruddha, Lord Vishnu is described. The Dwarapalakas are described, so all of this is coming in this next chapter, the 70th chapter. Good. So, I'm going to make this announcement right now because I'll forget. Otherwise, next Thursday is Thanksgiving time, holiday time, and many of you will be with family or friends on